This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Governor Eric Holcomb delivered his State of the State address at the State House before a packed crowd of the General Assembly. On Tuesday, January 14th, during the more than 30-minute-long speech, he addressed teacher pay and education, among other things. House Speaker Brian Bosma introduced the governor.
Honor and privilege to introduce the 52nd Lieutenant Governor of the State of Indiana, Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch.
Pursuant to Section 13 of Article 5 of the Indiana Constitution, the Indiana General Assembly is convened for the purpose of hearing a message from the Governor. Ladies and gentlemen of the House and Senate, distinguished guests, I have the high honor of introducing our Governor, Eric Holcomb.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, Madam Chief Justice, Lieutenant Governor, members of the General Assembly, my fellow Hoosiers, it's indeed an honor to stand before you to discuss the state of our state and the work that we're all going to do to make life better for all Hoosiers. And I'm going to get right to the point. Thanks to the energy, ingenuity, and hard work of Hoosiers all over our state, the state of our state is stronger than ever. The economic numbers are compelling. Since I first took this podium in 2017, our unemployment rate has dropped to 3.2%, a 19-year low. Lower than the national average and lower than every state we touch. We've set all-time records in job commitments and capital investment. In fact, there are an additional 88,000 jobs in the IEDC's pipeline because of the work that's occurred over the last 3 years. And it's not just the quantity, it's the quality. Last year's jobs commitments averaged more than $28 an hour, another all-time high. And we're pressing on. I'm pleased to announce tonight that Fiat Chrysler has chosen Indiana for diversification and will invest nearly $400 million in its Kokomo facility. Brad Clark, Vice President of Powertrain Manufacturing for Fiat Chrysler, and UAW Region 2 Director Rich Rankin are both with us tonight. And later this week, I look forward to going down to Princeton for another special Toyota announcement. Congratulations, gentlemen, and thank you for choosing Indiana. Our strong economy didn't just happen. We did it the old-fashioned way. We earned it. Throughout our time together, we've operated within an honestly balanced budget and protected our AAA credit rating. We set aside $2.3 billion in our state savings account, which is in stark contrast to our neighbors. Others have noticed too. In 2019, we ranked first in the Midwest and top five in the nation for business, number one for infrastructure, top two in the nation for long-term fiscal stability. A recent editorial in the Chicago Tribune put it this way. They said, "What does Indiana offer that Illinois doesn't? Lower taxes, more stable home values, balanced state budgets, and funded pension systems." No wonder 36,000 people moved to our state last year, and Indiana's welcome mat is out for everyone that wants to join us. But I've always believed that records are made to be broken. And races are meant not just to be run, but won. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, as you just heard, we have with us two of the winningest men in all of sports. The new owner of our most globally recognized icon, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Roger Penske, and with him, the president of Penske Racing, a local boy who proved that with a lot of hard work, Indiana dreams do come true, my lifelong pal, Tim Cindric. Gentlemen, would you please stand up again so we can fully express our Hoosier hospitality? We look forward to many more checkered flags in our future. My friends, just like on the track, I have no intention of slowing down. It was the great philosopher, Indiana Jones, who said, to be a good archaeologist, you got to get out of the library. Well, that's exactly what we've been doing, canvassing the country and the world, attracting talent and business to Indiana. Last October, I met with Prime Minister Modi of India, the world's largest democracy, population 1.4 billion people. We talked about our mutual interests in agriculture and sports and wellness. And after that meeting, he tweeted out how pleased, his word was gladdened, to his 50 million followers. I'm convinced that because of relationships like this, our collaboration will yield more growth for both. That's exactly why Commerce Secretary Jim Schellinger and I recently announced that we will host the first Indiana Global Economic Summit here in April. Not only will we bring together local economic development partners, but we'll also assemble diplomats and decision makers from around the world to discuss topics like cybersecurity, the future of mobility, and energy storage solutions. In addition, I've set a goal to triple our federal defense investment in our state. And I tasked Secretary Schellinger, his defense guru Cliff Tooley, and Brigadier General Dale Lyles at the National Guard to partner with other military and university, nonprofit, and private stakeholders to implement this strategic plan to do just that with Crane and Muscatatuck and Atterbury, and the list just goes on and on and on. There is no state in America better positioned to develop the future of warfare in areas like radar and sonar and hypersonics and drone technology than our state. And now a booming economy requires a strong infrastructure, and our growth has enabled us to make unprecedented investments into building one Indiana, border to border. We're completing I-69 from Evansville to Indy 3 years early, and we're making US 31 stoplight free all the way up to South Bend. But better roads has to mean safer roads. That's why we must join 21 other states that have already passed a hands-free device driving law. Distracted driving increases the risk of a crash by 3.5 times, and it is a leading killer of teenagers in our country. This is unacceptable and avoidable. Last August, Tina and Lauren Smith were riding motorcycles in a fundraiser, and they pulled off the side of the road to check their mileage, and they were sideswiped by a minivan who was looking at her cell phone while she was driving. Both Tina and Lauren lost a leg in that accident. Rather than ask, why me, they immediately asked themselves how they could be part of a solution, and they became advocates from that day on for reducing distracted driving ever since. Tina and Lauren, we hear you, and we're honored that you join us tonight. Now, being the crossroads of America means more than just building roads. That's why we're cleaning up our highways, having picked up nearly 16 million pounds of litter just last year. And we're blazing the most trail-friendly state in the nation, connecting thousands of unserved homes and businesses to high-speed internet service, adding more nonstop flights, transforming Northwest Indiana with two rail projects totaling well over $1 billion. We're finishing our due diligence on a fourth water port in Lawrenceburg and facilitating the investment of $436 million in 20 communities to improve local community water infrastructure. Just part of what cities all over our state are already doing to enhance their water systems. Furthermore, Indiana has the cleanest air and water since the Clean Air and Water Acts passed in the 1970s. And we now have four times more timberland acreage than we did 100 years ago. Recently, I learned that the Central Indiana Land Trust has committed to planting 1 million trees throughout Indiana to buffer some of our most iconic natural areas. I'm proud to announce tonight that I've directed the Department of Revenue and Resources to plant another 1 million trees on top of that over the next 5 years. That extra timberland will perfectly complement our $100 million investment and renovation of our incredible memory-making state parks. There's another project that's especially near and dear to my heart. Last session, we exempted military pensions from state income taxes. Thank you. And tonight, I'm delighted that in the spring, we will open the first facility in the country to bring together everything our veterans need, from the VA to the DAV, the Indiana Veterans Initiative, the VFW, and the American Legion, all under one roof. Thank you for helping make that happen. For all we're doing to make Indiana stronger, the most important investment that we can make is in our most important asset, our people. Whether it's making sure every child has access to a quality education or creating tools like the ICC phone app that shows where 92,000 open jobs are right now on your phone, everything we do is aimed at ensuring every Hoosier can take the greatest advantage of their talents and their drive, and their aspirations. This, of course, starts with a good education, and that means great schools filled with great teachers. I know a little bit about this. My mother was a teacher, and I saw how hard she worked. Teaching to her was not a job, but more like a calling. I'd go so far as to say a gift. And from the many conversations I've had with teachers all across our state, I know they feel exactly the same way. That's why I created the Teacher Compensation Commission and asked them to once and for all come up with a sustainable plan to make sure our teacher salaries are competitive with other Midwestern states. Their report is due this spring, but we did not wait. Last year, we devoted an unprecedented increase of $763 million new dollars to K-12 education, including paying down $150 million in the teacher retirement fund, which freed up $65 million more a year for teacher pay increases. Now, all of our school corporations have finalized their locally bargained contracts, and more Indiana school districts have raised teacher salaries this year than in any other year in recent history. Tonight, I'm recommending that in the next budget, the General Assembly uses an additional $250 million from our surplus and put it toward teacher retirement funds. In turn, $50 million a year will be generated to redirect to teacher pay. Together, that's $115 million more. $115 million more available annually, year after year, to increase teacher pay, with more to come from the Teacher Compensation Commission when they release their recommendations. And this year, you've already been at work at this. We'll also work to the K through 12 community to eliminate unfunded mandates and unnecessary paperwork. We'll make optional the requirement that teachers earn career-related professional growth points. We'll see to it that last year's iLearn proficiency test scores don't adversely affect evaluations and or school letter grades. We'll make sure every school in the state, every school in the state, has a relationship with a mental health provider. And we'll financially support educators who are working on the requirements to teach dual credit courses come 2022. Now, our efforts to provide career opportunities obviously do not stop or end at the classroom door. As I've said from day one, Hoosiers can outcompete anyone, anywhere, any day. But the vast majority of today's jobs require an education and training beyond high school. That's why our goal that 60% of all Hoosier adults have a post-secondary education and training remains critical to our collective success. This is the real game changer to addressing income inequality, upward social mobility, and driving true and deep economic growth. Thankfully, there are multiple paths for success. It might be a 2-year or a 4-year degree, or it might be a high-value credential or certificate. The good news is the number of Hoosiers with higher education has increased by 10 percentage points since 2008, so we are moving in the right direction. And at the same time, we're doubling down with some homegrown training programs. In Indiana, when the job seeker puts in the time to train, the state is going to pay for it. The facts are in. Over the past 3 years, more than 23,000 Hoosiers enrolled in our workforce-ready programs. And as the start of this year has unfolded, 10,000 of them have completed a next-level jobs workforce-ready eligible certificate program. This is a mega milestone for this program. Another 2,000 Hoosiers who previously started college and then quit have come back and completed their post-secondary educations. And more than 900 businesses, 900, have trained their employees using our employer training grant, providing training for more than 9,000 Hoosiers, their workforce and our state's workforce. This is huge progress. And we're not going to overlook anyone who is aspiring to be successful. What I'm talking about is including Hoosiers with disabilities who seek to live and work in a safe, affordable, and accessible environment. I join and commend my partner, Lieutenant Governor Crouch, who is spearheading efforts to make that dream a reality for the 100,000 Hoosiers with an intellectual or developmental disability. We've also dedicated resources to those who need a second chance. You know this is a passion of mine and a lot of yours. I challenged our Department of Correction to graduate 1,000 inmates annually in certified programs that lead to good jobs when they get out, both to boost our economy for sure, but also because they're less likely to return to prison. I'm happy to report that as of today, the DOC has graduated more than 3,000 inmates in just 2 years. I'm especially encouraged by the number of employers who are stepping forward to offer second chances to returning citizens. Among them is Grody Industries, a family business in Madison that designs and manufactures lighting systems for vehicles. The company needed skilled manufacturing employees, and the DOC connected them with offenders who had received that exact training while at the Madison Women's Prison. Grody hired its first worker from the program a year ago, and now they have five. One is Amber Campbell, who spent more than 5 years in prison, but got certified in manufacturing safety, production, and maintenance. She joined Grody in April last year, and she has already earned a promotion to team leader. She says her training, and I quote her, gave me the confidence that I can do anything as long as I work for it. I'm proud. For CEO Dominic Grody, it's a win-win. Along with Amber, he has another employee getting a degree to get a better job at Grody. And he has two others pursuing degrees at Ivy Tech in hopes of becoming engineers. And Dominic hopes that they stay with the company. Amber, on behalf of our state, we thank you for your hard work. And Dominic, we thank you for giving her that shot. Because of these new programs, and most importantly, opportunities, our state recidivism rate has gone down 4%. But in the, that's worth recognizing. That's real money. But in the spirit of always improving, I have a new challenge for Commissioner Carter at the DOC. By 2022, I want 500 returning citizens annually to have validated job opportunities waiting for them before they walk outside that gate. And 3,000 more formerly incarcerated individuals to have jobs within 5 months after their release. That's why I've proposed to redesign the way that we provide education credit to inmates so that they have more incentive to holistically engage in addiction recovery treatment, mental health management, and vocational development so they can re-enter our communities as engaged neighbors forever removed from the criminal justice system. And finally, we're determined to improve the health of our citizens, which means tackling some of the most toughest individual personal challenges out there. We've taken many steps to attack the opioid epidemic, including restricting the number of prescriptions and increasing the outpatient addiction treatment. And the trend is finally improving. In 2018, opioid prescriptions dropped 12% faster than the national average. And most importantly, deaths from drug overdoses went down 13%, twice the national decline. We also need to do more to reduce another kind of addiction. We know that 95% of smokers start the habit before age 21. And there's been an alarming rise in e-cigarette use among Indiana's youth. In addition to raising the age to 21, we'll seek to increase the penalties for folks who sell tobacco and vaping products to underaged buyers. Our message has not changed. If you peddle illegal substances to our kids, we're coming after you. We're also coming after high health care costs. That's why we'll establish an all-payer claims database as a first step to improve information about hospital pricing and insurance reimbursement, giving Hoosiers more transparency to make better choices for themselves. We'll also require that providers give good faith cost estimates 5 days before the care is provided, and will require in-network facilities to ensure their patients receive care at the network cost. Because when you're injured or ill, the last thing you need is a surprise when you get your medical bill. I also want to report on the progress we've made at the Department of Child Services. In 2018, I tasked Director Terry Stignan to right the ship, and she's done just that, undertaking a total culture change, focused on supporting the frontline staff who work directly with children. The result is a much more stable workforce. The turnover rate of family case managers has been reduced by 18%. And we're now seeing significantly improved safety outcomes, fewer kids in the system, fewer returning to the system, and a faster rate to permanency. This is real progress, but there is always, and I mean always, more work to do. For example, the department facilitated nearly 2,500 adoptions last year in 2019, but there are 1,400 other children currently available for adoption. For this reason, tonight, I'm creating the first adoption unit within the DCS. This unit will bring additional staff into each region whose sole purpose and focus will be assisting family case managers with finding permanent homes for children when parental rights have been terminated. We must cut the time it takes to adopt to under a year. We can and we will do it. Not only will this new unit help our most precious population find a permanent home faster, but it will also enable family case managers again to focus on their primary mission of protecting children in need and realize a parent's desire to start or maybe grow their own family. Lastly, you'll recall I challenged us to become the best state in the Midwest for infant mortality by 2024. There's no better person in the nation to lead this effort than our own health commissioner, Dr. Chris Box, an OBGYN and expert in this field. The levels of care program I asked you to approve ensures that the highest risk babies are now delivered at hospitals with the necessary facilities, and more expecting mothers are being verbally screened for substance use disorder and receive support and medicine when they need it. Steps like these are making a difference. Our infant mortality rate has decreased significantly from 2017 to 2018, and it's the lowest it's been since 2012. Moreover, the OB Navigator program you approved last year is up and running in Allen County, and it's set to go live in 19 more counties by the end of this year. And to help more moms and their babies get off to a healthier start, we're pursuing legislation that 27 other states have already adopted that will require our employers to provide reasonable accommodation for their pregnant employees. My fellow Hoosiers, we become known around the world as a state that works. I want us to become known as a state that works for all. Where every citizen, no matter their background or age or who they love or whether they grew up here or arrived last week, has equal access and opportunity to go as far as they wish and are willing to work for. That's what I'll continue to fight for. Some said it was a mistake to take on vexing issues that had eluded us and defied solutions for decades, like drug addiction or infant mortality. But we took them on, and we're seeing positive results because of it. That's what next level means to me. Keeping our record-setting economy rolling, yes. Building an infrastructure that connects us with everyone in every way, absolutely. Giving Hoosiers the tools they need to live healthier lives, for sure. But more than that, much more than that, making sure the enormous bounty of this state that we all love reaches every citizen wherever they live, whatever their aspirations are. I look forward to working with each and every one of you to make that happen. May God continue to bless us all and our great state. Thank you.
That's Governor Eric Holcomb with his 2020 State of the State Address. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Consideration for programming is provided by the Merrillville Rotary Club, celebrating its 17th annual Clothing Our Children fundraiser on Sunday, February 9th at Avalon Manor from 1 to 4 p.m., featuring wine, microbrews, food tastings, silent and live auctions. Tickets and sponsorships available at clothingourchildren.eventbrite.com.
LaPorte County will soon have an industrial park that can be served by two Class 1 rail carriers, and it'll be a one-of-a-kind in the Midwest. Lakeshore Public Radio Sharon Jackson spoke with Tony Rodriguez, the director of the LaPorte County Office of Community and Economic Development, about the performance-based grant that was awarded to LaPorte County to support the connection of the rail spur at the Kingsbury Industrial Park with the CSX mainline.
We could not be more excited with having been notified by the Indiana Economic Development Corporation of them having approved the $1 million infrastructure grant to enhance the Kingsbury Logistic Park's Tier 1 railroad connection. So the funds that are being made available through this grant are opening the door to a direct Tier 1 railroad connection, making the Kingsbury Logistics Park a world-class heavy manufacturing industrial park opportunity that we can begin to market immediately. So we are extremely pleased with the support, the hard work of the county commissioners, and the strong support that the county commissioner that was started under Dr. Vijakora, who strongly supported the application, and the state of Indiana Economic Development Corporation's approval of the grant. We just simply could not be more excited.
So when you say it's going to make the Kingsbury Industrial Park world class and tier one, what does that mean? That it's going to have connections all over the country? It's going to be able to go anywhere?
Well, yeah, this infrastructure improvement is going to allow, which does not exist today, it will allow both the CSX Railroad and the CN Railroad, both Tier 1 rail line operators, to have direct access to this park, and which is something that does not exist in the greater Midwest, where you'd have an industrial park served by two Tier 1 railroads. So it enhances our marketability of the park, and we are simply elated to have the support of the state. In any successful economic development project, there are always more people involved behind the scenes making these things possible. And that's where I could not be more pleased with the county commissioner support that was received. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that LaPorte County has made a significant investment in excess of $6 million into infrastructure of the Kingsbury Industrial Park that allowed us to get to this point today. So it's not like this has happened overnight. This has been many years in the making, and what the Indiana Economic Development Corporation has done here is allow us to finish the remaining I refer to it as a linchpin connection of the Tier 1 railroad to the park, almost as somewhat of an icing on the cake, if you will. and making available this this rail connection, and thus in turn assisting those manufacturers that are currently located in the park to continue to expand.
So what kind of economic development do you think will happen as a result of this? I don't know if that's a fair question, because it kind
of...
Oh, no,
it sure is.
Oh, it is.
And
okay.
that would be important for your listening public to be aware of. We're very pleased to be able to market the Kingsbury Logistics Park to... And the nice thing about it is, given its geography and where it's physically located, it allows us to market this park to the heavy manufacturer, the manufacturer that is possibly an up or downstream steel processing type manufacturing firm. Right now, the park is home to several steel processing related companies. But so we will continue to market to those. We're actively working with the companies that are located in the park today to assist in getting broadband connectivity to those industries that are within the park as well. But we know that the park, it becomes more attractive to companies looking to locate that are in heavy manufacturing and seeking to find a home in the Midwest. So that's who... And we are actively marketing, and we're actively in discussions with more than three manufacturing concerns as we speak today, working through infrastructure-related activities. You know, is the adequate availability of sewer process treatment, adequate water availability, adequate power connectivity? All of those are the key components in us adequately marketing the park to the end users. And so that's why we're so excited about this announcement of this grant. It closes the loop, allowing for the final connection of the Tier 1 railroads to Kingsbury Industrial Park. I mean, all the hard work that's gone in over the last many years is kind of brought to fruition with this announcement and the support of this infrastructure, critically important infrastructure grant.
What manufacturers are looking to locate into this industrial park?
Well, in the economic development business, it's not uncommon for us to be bound by some confidentiality on the early stages while the companies are looking to locate. So we're actively competing to outcompete and to win these investments. So unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to say, but I can tell you that their manufacturers, which have tend to have the highest economic impact to the community, which is why we spend our time in the Office of Community and Economic Development working on manufacturing-related, attracting these kinds of investments. And not only to attract new investments and to make sure we're attracting people and human resources to the greater LaPorte County area, but we're always focused on taking care of business at home as well.
Okay.
And through a business retention expansion program. Manufacturing jobs today we recognize that they are truly a premium to the community. They're critically important to the future of LaPorte County, and it's why we're focused on enhancing our marketability, our access to competitive freight rates, and we could not be more pleased with the state of Indiana's support of this grant.
When will the connection be built?
They're finalizing the execution and the signing of the grant agreements, and we hope that within the next 60 days, they will be working to start construction.
Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson speaking with LaPorte County's Director of Community Development and Economic Development, Tony Rodriguez. Preparing for the birth of a child can be one of the most blissful times in the life of a family, but sadly, for thousands of expectant mothers every year, infant loss can turn that bliss into tragedy with very little warning. Lakeshore Public Radio's Dee Dotson spoke with Amelia Kosalwin about Emma's Footprints, an organization that she founded to help with a mission to walk families through their grief journey.
When President Ronald Reagan announced the existence of Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month in 1988, he said in a speech, "When a child loses his parent, they are called an orphan. When a spouse loses her or his partner, they are called a widow or widower. When a parent loses their child, there isn't a word to describe them." Sadly, infant loss is a pain that many parents in the region understand, but one that society too often minimizes or ignores. Amelia Kowalison founded Emma's Footprints following the loss of her daughter, Emma Rose, in 2014. Amelia, can you take a few moments to share with us your journey to start Emma's Footprints?
Well, our journey started in 2014, after our twins, Alex and Emma, were born prematurely at 31 weeks. They were immediately taken to the NICU at Porter Regional Hospital, and at about a week old, we found out that Emma had had a severe stroke in utero. So we had her transferred to Riley Children's Hospital in Indianapolis, and Alex actually was not able to go there, so he had to remain at Porter while he finished up his care. What happened is that while we were at Riley Children's Hospital, we received numerous care packages from people all over, and it was so kind and so touching. My husband and I literally cried every time. We were just so blessed by what these people did. And so when Emma passed away at 23 days old, in lieu of flowers at her funeral, we asked people to bring care package items so that we could do this one-time act of kindness to provide that love to families at Porter. Well, what happened is that one-time act of kindness just grew and grew and grew, and all of a sudden we had basically a house full of donations and items, and the funeral home had been full of donations and items. So we reached out to a local attorney, we set up a fund, and we established our organization, Emma's Footprints, with another organization out here underneath them. And over the past for almost 5 years, our organization has grown so much. Our community has been so loving and grateful to us that we are now our own established 501c3 as of a few months ago, which is very, very exciting. We are now providing care packages, NICU care packages, to all of the NICUs in our area, as well as Riley Children's Hospital and Beacon Health in South Bend. We have helped Lurie Children's Hospital. We provide our bereavement bears, which are bears that when family goes through a miscarriage or infant loss, they can take home with them so they're not leaving empty-handed. We have bereavement care packages on our website, www.emmasfootprints.org, that people can order and have sent to people. We also have a new product that we just launched, which is our rainbow baby care packages for families that are pregnant again after loss. And then we also have we have four support groups in our area, two in Porter County and two in Lake County for NICU families. We are working on workshops, which we've done in the past and we want to bring back. And we just continue to do whatever we can to support and help families in our community and beyond.
For families experiencing pregnancy or infant loss, having the time to say goodbye can be a very important step as they try to make sense out of what has happened. How has your organization helped during this time? Now, I understand you have counselors on your team.
Well, the counselors that we have, we're not actually counselors, so I want to just clarify that. It's peer support that we provide. So we have families, mothers that have experienced this as well, that will walk with you through your journey. The person that we do have right now as our bereavement care team leader is Michelle, and she runs another company called Juno's Promise, which is a doula organization that helps families through stillbirth and through the pregnancy and birth of a rainbow baby. We are hoping, once we have an office in the near future, to have an actual therapist on staff, and that's one of our big goals to have. But another way that we support families is that every hospital in our area has something called a cuddle cot for when a family experiences a child born still. And what that cuddle cot does is that it keeps the baby's temperature at what it needs to be so that the family can have more time with them, so that family can come in and meet the child, so they can take pictures, so they can bathe the child and have those moments that studies have shown really prove to help the family through their journey. We provided those about 3 years ago. Another thing that we have for our NICU families is that we have the peer-led support groups. So we have these two wonderful ladies, Brittany and Taryn. Brittany is our NICU care team leader, and she runs our Lake County ones, one at St. Anthony's in Crown Point, and then another one at a pizzeria in Crown Point, and then at, Carriage Pizza in Crown Point. And then Taryn runs one at Porter Hospital and then at a Starbucks here in Valpo. And so those have been really helpful for our families in the NICU or who have had a child in the NICU. And then we also provide a ton of online support. We have a pregnancy after loss group. We have a NICU support group. We have a bereavement group. We provide articles and resources. And we just do whatever we can to help families in their time of need. And just as we would want to be helped, we're here, you know, we're here 24/7. There's always one of us that can be here, and it can be at the hospital if a family needs us, which we do. We've helped plan funerals. We go in and we have pictures taken of the children. We will provide meals. We will do anything that we can to help families when they need us.
What would you tell those who have suffered a loss but don't know where to turn?
You know, I have that question a lot, and I always say just walk with that family. Be there. Dig your toes in deep and let them know that you're there. Don't walk away. Support them. Remember that child. Let them talk. Let them grieve how they need to. Don't put a timeline on them. I think bringing a meal is always wonderful. Talking about their child. Don't be afraid to say their child's name, because they're never going to forget their child. They're never going to forget that they had that child. That child is always a part of them. It makes my heart so happy whenever someone says Emma's name. So I would say just continue to let their child live through you, and just honor that family by honoring their child and honoring their feelings, and always, always offer grace, because once you lose a child, you are a different person. There's so much of you that has changed, and it's a different journey in life that you're now going through. So that grace is so, so important.
And finally, Amelia, how can lost parents and their families get in contact with Emma's Footprints?
Well, they can find us on Facebook at Emma K's Footprints, or they can find us at Instagram at Emma's Footprints IN. They can reach out to us at info@emmasfootprints.org, or they can call us at 219-299-9246.
Amelia Kowalison is the founder of Emma's Footprints. Emma's Footprints is an organization with a goal to sustain lost parents and their families through the fog of grief and care for them in every stage of healing and hope after loss.
And thanks to Dee for that, as well as to Lakeshore Public Radio Sharon Jackson for her conversation with Tony Rodriguez. And we bring you Governor Eric Holcomb's 2020 State of the State address as well. And thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today. I'm Chris Nolte, and we'll be back with you on Monday.